ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयं नमामि भगवत्पादं शङ्करं लोकशङ्करं शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बालरायणं सूतभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवत् गीते भवद्वेषिणीम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तन्न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः.
We've been discussing the 10th chapter of this Bhagavad Gita, wherein Lord Krishna is describing his various glories at the request of Arjuna. Arjuna requested Lord Krishna, Katham vidyamaham yogin tvam sada parichintayan. O great yogi, tvam sada parichintayan, all the time thinking about you, all the time meditating upon you, katham aham tvam vidyam, how should I know? I want to know you, and for that, I want to all the time think of you, but I know that all the time thinking of you, meditating upon you with an attitude of worship or devotion is a means of knowing you. So that is what I want to do. Kena kena, by what different forms, O Lord, you are pervading this whole universe. Vistarena, in detail, please describe your glories. This is what Arjuna requested. One beautiful thing is that all that Lord Krishna is waiting for is request on the part of Arjuna. That's all. No question asked. What do you mean, Arjuna? Why do you want to know this? What will you do with it? No such question at all. Or wait for 6 months, you know, then I'll tell you. I think go and do this kind of some practices. No such thing. No sooner Arjuna asks for something, Lord Krishna is just ready, as we'll see in the next chapter also. No sooner Arjuna asks, Lord, may I see your cosmic form? Sure, you see. Whatever, this is an amazing relationship here between the disciple and the teacher. With the teacher is all compassion. And not only all compassion, all love. Vatsalya, in fact. Vatsalya means the love that a mother has for the child. It's that kind of love that Lord Krishna here exhibits for Arjuna. Partho vatsah sudhir bhokta. So the partha, Arjuna is compared to vatsa, a calf. And Lord Krishna is like a cow, the mother. And the milk from the udders of the cow just flows automatically because of the love of the calf, and so also the milk in the form of Bhagavad Gita is flowing effortlessly from the heart of Lord Krishna at the calf, who is Arjuna. And Lord Krishna, in so many verses, describes so many glories. Glories means divine manifestations, as we said earlier, for the purpose of meditation. When it comes to Saguna Brahma, Brahman with attributes, meaning the Lord is manifest, the Lord's omniscience, omnipotence, omnipresence, all of this is manifest as the universe. And first is to know Ishvara as possessed of all these glories. Ishvara is possessed of all the attributes, all the greatness, and then to know Him as your own self. So this knowing Ishvara is a two-step process. First is knowing Him as possessed of various attributes, called Saguna Brahma, Brahman with guna or attributes. So these attributes are superimposed upon. It's not that Brahman and guna are the same reality. Even when we say Saguna Brahma, Saguna means gunena saha vartate sagunam, Brahman with gunas. That seems to create an impression that Brahman and gunas are the same degree of reality, which is not so. Gunas means the creatorship, sustainership, omniscience, omnipotence. All of these are as a superimposed upon Brahman. The idea is that we look upon Ishvara first as omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent, as a ruler, as a controller, as the one who is benevolent, as the one who showers His grace upon everyone. This is our first appreciation of Ishvara. Then comes the appreciation of Ishvara as our own self. And so this appreciation of Ishvara's glory is done by a devotee. So the first step is to be a devotee of Ishvara, worship Him, meditate upon Him. And the second step is, so to know Ishvara in this manner, and second step is to know Ishvara as my own self. So in this 10th chapter, the purpose of describing these glories, the greatness of the Lord is evident, is to help us meditate upon Him. What is meditation is maintaining a current of thoughts centered upon Ishvara. And for that, we require a certain help, what we call alambana, a prop or a help is required. Just as to meditate upon Lord Dakshinamurti, we have a vigraha here, which becomes, you can worship Him as Dakshinamurti, or with the help of the vigraha, you can meditate upon Dakshinamurti, that's the principle. Thus, our culture is always presented for our convenience, what we call various symbols, or various names, various forms, which help us as alambana, as support for meditation upon Ishvara. Recognizing that at first, there is no way that I can comprehend Ishvara, who is all-knowing, omnipotent, omnipresent, infinite is. He is limitless and my mind is extremely limited. There is no way that I can ever comprehend Him or even meditate upon Him as He is. As Mahimna Stotra says, kasya vishaya, who can objectify Ishvara? Of course, as kati vidha guna, kasya vishaya. First of all, who can ever comprehend all the gunas or all the attributes of Ishvara? Some people think that worshipping Brahman with attributes, Saguna Brahma, is easy. Well, it's easier, no doubt, but then Brahman has infinite or countless attributes. There's no way that our mind can ever meditate upon, comprehend the countless attributes. Therefore, a few attributes are presented in a particular form, such as Dakshinamurti, such as Shri Krishna, such as Rama. In this chapter, of course, what is presented here are the expressions in this universe expressions of nature, expressions of outstanding human being, outstanding living beings, that I am the lion or tiger among all the animals. So lion or tiger represents something outstanding. I'm the eagle among all the birds, because eagle also represents something outstanding. I'm Prahlada among all the demons, daityas, among all the children of Diti. Prahlada is highly distinguished, represents something outstanding. Thus in any different classes of objects, Lord Krishna has identified a given member of a class as his vibhuti, as his glory. As we'll see later, I mean here, that not only that particular member is his glory, everything is his glory. But since in the beginning our mind is not available to see Ishvara everywhere, although that is ideal, but the mind is not available because of likes and dislikes. I like certain things, I dislike certain things, the strong likes and dislikes are there. I have my own notions of what is good, what is bad, what is beautiful, what is not. All of these kind of notions I have. And therefore, right now I can only meditate upon Ishvara who fits my notions. So who qualifies, who satisfies my requirements of what is beautiful? Who satisfies my requirements of what is glorious? What is great? What is mighty? I have my own notions of what is mighty, what is glorious, what is great, what is beautiful. And therefore, to help me, Lord Krishna describes such expressions where I can see, in spite of my likes and dislikes, in spite of my preconceived notions, I can see the mightiness, the greatness, the glory, the beauty, the charm. So these objects or the members from different class. Lord Krishna has covered many class of things. Among the trees, I am Ashwatha tree. Among the rivers, I am the Ganges. Among the mountains, I am the Himalaya. So trees, mountains, rivers, snakes, cobras, the forest animals, daityas, the demons, the human beings, horses, elephants, the great sages, devatas, all these class of objects have been, you know, taken into account. They're all familiar to us, or people were familiar with them. And this is described to help us meditate upon Lord, because we are impressed by, or we are inspired by, what is glorious, what is mighty, what is great, that inspires me. It is easy for me to see the expression of divinity in something which is great and glorious or mighty. Therefore, these are described as the glories of the Lord. We are now almost coming to the conclusion of this chapter. We have to continue with the verse number 36.
Dyutam chalayatamasmi, tejas tejasvinamaham, jayosmi vyavasayosmi, sattvam sattvavatamaham. Dyutam chalayatam, among those who deceive. Chala means deception. Chalayat means one who deceives, one who deceives. Chalayatam, among those who deceive. I am the champion everywhere, Lord Krishna says. I am champion of those who deceive also. Dyutam, that's a game of dice. Among those who deceive, I am the game of dice. Particularly loaded dice. Dice, it can be a level game, I mean, you know, where it's anyone can win, any party can win, as long as there is a level play field. But dices can be loaded. And then the person who knows how to play with those dice can really cheat the other person, completely deceive. As Pandavas themselves were deceived by Shakuni, Duryodhana's uncle, and Yudhishthira, the eldest of the Pandava, was challenged, was invited to play a game of dice. And he accepted that. Now people always wonder, why should Yudhishthira have accepted to play dice with these fellows? Because not only played, he lost everything. He lost everything the first time. That time he was in fact pardoned by Dhritarashtra. Then again he was called, again he came back. And next time he lost everything, including Draupadi. But they were cheated, because the dice were loaded. And Shakuni, of course, was an expert player of this game of dice. And Yudhishthira lost everything. Shalayatam, among those who cheat, among those who deceive. Of course, there are many things. Human beings must be, I don't know, I think he's greater than even a game of dice, I guess. But a human being plays dice anyway. So Lord Krishna says, among those who deceive, I am the game of dice. Akshahi ma divya, in fact, it is said that you should not play the game of dice. Vedas actually prohibit this. But why did the Yudhishthira play? Because it is said, some rule is there. The Kshatriya should not withdraw, shy away from a challenge. When he's challenged for a battle or challenged for a game of dice, challenged for a battle, he should be ready to fight, and challenged for a game of dice, he should be ready to play. This is some kind of rule for Kshatriyas, which is what Yudhishthira followed. That is why we often say that we should refrain from judging the characters of Mahabharata or of Ramayana or whatever by the standards that obtain right now in 21st century. Because the way they conducted themselves, or the way they were called upon to conduct themselves, was in keeping with the rules of the code of conduct that obtained at that time. And the code of conduct changes as we learn, as a society learns and grows, and should learn and grow, and this code of conduct should change. The fundamental values do not change. Sanatana dharma. Satyam vada dharmam chara, etc. They do not change. Tattva sarvam khalo idam brahma, all this is brahma, does not change. You are brahma, this doesn't change. But then, dharma, one meaning of dharma is a way of life. And this teaching of the eternal values is to be practiced in our life. And that is where these various rules are given to us. That we follow these rules, and that is how you will practice them. That depends upon the insight that a person has with reference to how to practice that value in our daily life. That insight can change. However great the rishi is, that insight can change. There is nothing final about the code of conduct. Hinduism has always recognized this and has always grown. And therefore, even if today somebody quotes Manusmriti and says, this is what Manu says, he could have said it with all respect. This is what sage Manu said 2000 years ago. We will see. Is it applicable today? Then we will practice it. Put it into practice. If it is not applicable today, we may just let it go. That is how it should be. We cannot stick to rules of 5,000 years ago, and then insist upon applying them today, because the social conditions that exist at that time were quite different from what exists now. Just because Yudhishthira, why am I saying all this? Just because Yudhishthira accepted the challenge of playing dice, we should not take that as a lesson for ourselves. Swamiji, but Yudhishthira did, so I also did not. Oh, but they ate meat. They may have eaten meat. There are evidences, you know, everybody eating meat in those days. And that is what they quote today. I remember 15-20 years ago, I used to receive letters from different communities who are building temples. And when a temple is built, there is a prayer hall. And there is always this kind of a debate going on, or a conflict going on. One group of people would say that this temple hall is only meant for worship. Or you can conduct here the events which are in the same spirit of worship. Other people say that why? Is it, you know, we can also have social occasions. You let us have social occasions. But why can't we drink? Why can't we eat meat? So in temple also they want to do that. These are all Hindus supposedly, you know. And they are like scholars, and they challenge. So look, this is what Manusmriti says, this is what this says, this is what that says. Our answer is whether Manusmriti says or not. What is relevant today is what we should do today. And now the culture has grown. Then ahimsa became the predominant dharma. Even though Mahabharata says ahimsa paramo dharma several times in the text. But it's difficult to find ahimsa in Mahabharata and Ramayana. That was their way of solving problems. Every yuga or every culture, every time has its own way of solving problems. For example, today we attack Iraq to solve our problem. That's a way of solving our problem as we understand it today. And after 100 years of finding, we'll learn differently. So that doesn't mean that the method to apply today, it has to be applied after 500 years also. And so, the Hindu society has grown tremendously. So many acharyas came. That's why Buddhism came. That's why Jainism came. And even though they rejected the Vedas as pramanam, they all contributed greatly into the Indian culture and growth. And so many other bhakti acharyas came, Vaishnava acharyas came, and their teachings are very important, which are followed by majority of people. So that should become our guide for code of conduct, and not what was done 5,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago. Dyutam chalayatam asmi, of those who deceive, I am dyutam, I am the game of dice. This is, people ask, what do you mean, Swami? God is a deceiver. God also deceives? Yes. That is also part of creation. So deception also is part of creation. As you said earlier, death also is part of creation. And Lord therefore says, mrityuhu sarvaharasyaham, I am the death that robs everything, including your life. That death I am. And he is very bold. It requires a great courage to say this. That I am, I don't think anybody, any other scripture in the world will say, that Ishvara says that I am the champion of all deceivers. I am the champion of all thieves. You know, stenanam pataye namaha. My salutations to the Lord, or the master of all the thieves. Because Ishvara is everything. And what is the Ishvara? Ultimate lesson is, what is the Ishvara? And therefore we cannot compartmentalize that only good things are Ishvara and evil things are not. Everything is Ishvara. We have to understand what is good and what is evil. What is the reality that we have to understand. Not become too emotional about this and how can it, you know, understand everything. What's a reality? Ultimately, all of these things are reality, which is relative reality. Meaning that there is evil in this creation also. But that is not real. It's only incidental. The goodness also in the creation, that is inherent. The goodness is a reality, the evil is only incidental due to ignorance. And that this deception and everything comes. So, Lord Krishna, that is also my expression. Tejas tejasvinamaham. I am the tejaha, the brilliance. Of the brilliant. who is a tejasvi? Ati ugra prabhavah. People who possess a great might or some glorious attribute, great strength, or people who are able to create impression, you know, who are able to impress other people. Ati ugra prabhavanam teja apratihata ajnatvam. Tejas means one whose ajna or order cannot be transgressed because the person has such he has such greatness that he automatically, whoever goes in his presence, becomes just humble. Like these devatas were debating, who is that yaksha? And all devatas went to fire god and said, "Oh fire god, will you please go and find out who that yaksha is?" "Yes, I will certainly find out." But when he goes in the vicinity of yaksha, he is able to say not a word. That's called tejaha. That yaksha had, that's a tejas, that prabhava, that might, that glory, in whose presence everybody just becomes very humble, whose command cannot be transgressed. That's called tejasvi. Tejaha, tejasvi namaham. So of those who are tejasvi like that, the mighty, I am their might or I am their brilliance. Jayosmi, I am the Jayaha. Jetrunam parajita apeksha utkarsh lakshano Jayaha. Of those who conquer, of those who are victorious, I am the Jaya or victory. What is victory? Victory is that shows your excellence over the person whom you have conquered. Victory in any field shows what? The excellence of the one who has won or conquered. Whether it's victory in a game of sport, victory in a battle, victory in a debate, victory in many ways. There are very often many confrontations. And so where the victory is that, I am that Jaya, I am the victory of the victorious. A victory that establishes his superiority over the one who lost. That which is called the superiority, that victory or the Jaya, I am. So now next time when you have some debate with your friends and you win your point and you feel proud about that, then remember this. Jaya asmi. Lord Krishna has said that I am the victory, because of which a person is victorious, because of which a person conquers. And so once you remember that, at least the pride will go. Swami, then there is no fun also. Well, there is no kick. It's all Ishwara's glory. What is mine? Thus we have to transform ourselves and learn to gain a kick out of Ishwara's glory. How do you get that? Consider yourself as fortunate, as blessed. That glory of Ishwara is manifest in you. That you are enjoying the grace of Ishwara, because of which that glory is manifest in you, and that glory became, you know, evident in your victory. Whether you win in a game of sport, or in a debate, or wherever, even in a contract, you know, there are so many competitors, and you got the contract, you got the promotion, you got a job. Enjoy that. Vedanta does not say that you should not enjoy that event. Enjoy it. But the method of enjoyment is, if you enjoy it with pride, it's a binding enjoyment. If enjoyment with humility, appreciation of grace, it's a freeing enjoyment. So what Bhagavad Gita or Vedanta teaches is, not to enjoy life. It teaches us how to enjoy life. So that our enjoyment in fact does not bind us. Enjoyment elevates us. So be elevated as well as enjoy. That's why Lord Krishna is describing his various glories. And when we see the expression of that glory in ourselves or elsewhere, we can appreciate Ishvara. Jayosmi, Vyavasayosmi, vyavasaya. Two meanings of this word vyavasaya. Vyavasaya is nischaya. Nischaya means determination, ascertainment, vyavasaya. I am determined to do a certain thing. That's the vyavasaya. Well, it also means a clear understanding. That also is called vyavasaya. Or vyavasaya means udyama, effort. This is the colloquial, in the regional language, the word vyavasaya is in the sense of effort, udyama, which is also meaning in Sanskrit. So Lord Krishna says, vyavasaya, I am the vyavasaya, I am the udyama, I am the effort. It is udyama, the effort, which in fact, which is primarily responsible for the achievements in our life. As I say, 10% inspiration, 90% perspiration. So each one has some inspiration, but that inspiration becomes meaningful, fruitful when it is accompanied with perspiration. That is called effort, udyama or vyavasaya. So people are successful. Are successful because of their udyama, because of their effort. No doubt they are blessed, as Pujya Swamiji says, to be in the right place at the right time, or you possess some special skills, possess some special insight, possess certain special gift. But then with vyavasaya, with udyama, with effort actually, that gift becomes fruitful or becomes a blessing to you. And so the capacity that we have of applying ourselves to any kind of a pursuit, that udyama or effort, Lord Krishna says, that I am. So when somebody says, I am a self-made man, I have created everything, I built everything, I did this. So who gave you the capacity to do that? That capacity, Lord Krishna says, I am. All this will make us humble. But don't think that humble man is, we think that humility means you are a miserable person. No. People think that only when you are proud and assertive, then alone you can be happy, and then if you are humble, you are not happy. Not, it's the other way around. By humility, we do not mean a show of humility. Not just being submissive, etc. We mean humility that arises from a true appreciation of realities of life. And Lord Krishna is describing His glories and a true appreciation of the glories. So whenever we discover manifestation of a glory, then you become humble. This is Ishvara's gift. This is His grace. But when you appreciate the grace, then there is a sense of blessedness, that I am blessed. So that joy, that happiness is sattvic happiness. The happiness of claiming the victory, etc., is that it is short-lived. Not only that, but it requires you to be always victorious. There is a lot of stress involved there, really. And it creates great misery when you are not victorious. On the other hand, when there is a humility in you, even if you do not win, you know that this person won, the jaya, the victory in him, also Ishvara's glory. And that being the case, you know, I need not feel bad about it. This is also Ishvara's glory. This is Ishvara's glory. This victory is Ishvara's glory. Defeat also is Ishvara's glory. He has not mentioned it here, but then when he says victory I am, I guess defeat also he is. Vyavasayosmi sattvam sattvatamaham sattvatam sattvikanam. The people of sattvika, possessed of the predominance of sattva guna. So, what kind of characteristics manifest themselves when there is predominance of sattva in our mind? Dharma, jnana, vairagya, aishwarya. A sattvic person is going to be a dharmic person. Who would love to follow dharma or righteous path? Who has a natural inclination to follow the values of life? He loves to do that. A sattvic person has a natural love for righteousness, a natural love for following values, not that it is obliging somebody. When we normally follow some values such as honesty, then I feel proud and I feel that I am obliging the world by being honest or truthful. That is all rajoguna. Because from there also I want some kind of a credit. A sattvic person does it because he cannot do otherwise also. Ask him to tell a lie, he'll have a hard time telling lie or cheating somebody. But one who has a natural love for dharma or righteousness, jnanam, wherever sattva is there, there is clarity of knowledge also. Vairagya, where sattva is there is vairagya dispassion. Meaning freedom from likes and dislikes. A person enjoys usually a sameness of the mind, enjoys an equanimity of the mind, doesn't take sides. He enjoys an objective mind. That is sattva. Aishwaryam. All these also will bring aishwarya, the greatness to the person. It comes when sattva, when dharma is there, when vairagya is there, jnanam is there, when knowledge is there, dispassionateness is there, objectivity is there. Means when your goodness is manifest in your life, it will automatically bring prosperity. Not that that person cares for it anyway. Because inner prosperity gives you so much satisfaction that it doesn't matter. And when you don't want it, it comes. It is in Gujarati, there is a line, Are prarabdha to ghalu, rahe che dura mange to. This prarabdha destiny is crazy. More you ask for it, farther it runs away. Na mange daud tu aave. If you don't ask for it, it comes running after you. So this sattvic person is so satisfied with himself in what he does. He doesn't ask for these things, then these things may come. Of course, if there is prarabdha. So dharma, jnana, vairagya, aishwarya, these are all the characteristics of sattva. Sattvam sattvatamaham. And so, all this sattva here means sattva karyam. Sattva here means the effect of the manifestation of sattva, dharma, jnana, vairagya, aishwarya. So in a person, where there is dharma, righteousness, when there is knowledge, where there is dispassion, you know, Lord Krishna says, that is my expression. Sattvam of the sattvic people, I am the sattva. Meaning in sattvic people, I manifest as this dharma, jnana, vairagya, etc. Then continuing, in the next verse we are told, Vrishni nam vasudevosmi, Pandava nam dhananjaya, Muni nam apyaham vyasaha, Kavina mushana kavihi. Vrishninam Vasudevosmi. That's interesting. Lord Krishna says, Vasudeva is my glory. I am Vasudeva. Among Vrishnis, among the descendants of a king whose name was Vrishni. So Lord Krishna is called variously as Yadava because he belonged to he was a descendant of King Yadu. There are so many kings. Vrishni was one of the kings. Yadu was another king, Shura was another king, Asurasena was another. So he is called Shauri, he is called Vrishni, and also Varshni, he is also called Yadava. So Vrishni was one of the powerful kings in the Yadu Vamsha. So how these Vamshas are known by people, you know? So many kings were there, but then it is called Yadu Vamsha, because the greatness or the power that was displayed by Yadu. What is called Vrishni Vamsha, called Bharata Vamsha, you know, because of Bharata. So Raghu Vamsha, you know. There are so many other kings, but the Raghu stands out. Therefore, there were Ikshvaku and many others, but Raghu stands out. So Raghava. So Lord Krishna also is said to belong to Vrishni Vamsha, the lineage of Vrishni. I am Vasudeva. I am the incarnation as Vasudeva. So here Lord describes his own incarnation is his glory. So, Vrishninam Madhya Vasudeva Putratvena Prasiddha. Who is Vasudeva? Vasudevasya Putra Vasudeva. Apatyam Puma means Vasudeva, son of Vasudeva.
This Vasudeva and Devaki were all great people. In the previous life, they were Kashyapa and Aditi. The son of Prajapati is Kashyapa. And before that also, there was a Prajapati Sutapas, and the wife was Prushni. These then got incarnated as Kashyapa and Aditi. And this Sutapas, who was a Prajapati, and Rushni, his wife, they performed tapas for some 12,000 years or something, you know. And God was pleased with them and asked them, what can I do for you? What do you want? Oh Lord, we want you as our son. So many people have asked the Lord like that, you know. We want you as our son. And so then they became Kashyapa and Aditi, and Lord was born as Vamana as their son. But then this has to happen three times. So then third time they were born as Vasudeva and Devaki, and Lord was born as Krishna as their son. Vasudeva had another wife, by the way. What was his name? What was her name?
Rohini.
Rohini, right. And now, of course, the Bhagavad people, they are all experts. And son of Rohini was Balaram. You know, this was all the trick on the part of Lord. Because Kamsa was told by declaration from heaven that the eighth child of this, your sister Devaki, he will become your killer, will kill you. There and then he arrested them, and then only when Vasudeva promised that I will hand over all the children to you, then alone they were spared, their life was spared, they were imprisoned. One by one, this Devaki gave birth to children. And they were all smashed, you know, by this Kamsa, so cruel. Then seventh child. So when seventh child was born, that time Lord tells his Maya, says, take this child and put it in the embryo of Rohini. So that child was taken, was not given to Kamsa, was taken away from there and was installed and inserted in the womb of Rohini, the other wife of Vasudeva, and from him Balarama was born. Now the eighth child. And of course we know the famous story. Again Lord says to his Maya, look, this Yashoda is going to give birth to a daughter, and this son, eighth son, you take there and exchange. What plots are there? It's amazing plots, you know. In the Puranas also, Mahabharata is of course most amazing drama, you know, with so many plots and subplots and subplots. But here this eighth child, before Kamsa could learn about it, naturally that all the gatekeepers and, you know, all of them fell asleep, all the doors opened, and Vasudeva carried the child, went across river Yamuna, and Yamuna changed the course to allow Vasudeva to pass through. And then again everybody fell asleep. So nobody knew that Vasudeva came. The child was exchanged, the daughter was brought back, and then Kamsa was informed that a child is born to Devaki. Once they came back, everybody woke up, all the doors closed, and Kamsa came to know. He came and took the child and was again going to thrash against a rock. And that child flew away from his hand. And from there declared that your killer is already born. So that was Maya, the Shakti. So that is how this Devi is said to be Sahodari. One of the names of Devi is that she is a Narayana Sahodari. Because born of the same Udara as Narayana, sister of Narayana. Anyway, so this is how, this is Vasudeva, Lord Krishna. Then also there is a story about, there are so many reasons why Lord Krishna was born as incarnated. so many people had so many curses and so many things were happening for this thing to happen, you know. But then, here of course we are told that this is Prajapati, the creator, once from his heart, from the heart of Brahmaji once, a Prajapati's name was Dharma, he emerged. Dharma means righteousness, and this Prajapati, the creator, was very righteous. This Dharma had, he married some 10 daughters, you know, of I think another Prajapati. And he had 4 sons. You know what are the names of the sons of Dharma? Hari, Krishna, Nara, and Narayana. Of these 4 sons, Hari and Krishna. See, I have to add something to the Bhagavata. They are all listening to Puranas, you know. So, we have to add something to that. Hari and Krishna were the great yogis, where Nara and Narayana were great ascetics. So these two, Nara and Narayana sages, went to Badrika Ashrama and performed penance for 1,000 years. And of course their penance, they became so powerful that Indra was really worried, and therefore he sent many apsaras, many heavenly damsels to attract them and to deviate them from their penance. So sage Narayana was very angry when these apsaras came. He was to curse them. Then sage Nara stopped him and said, no, be compassionate to them. And so then sage Narayana said, right now you leave me alone. Don't disturb my penance. In the Dwapara Yuga, when I get incarnated on this earth, that time I will satisfy all your desires. And so many people were promised. Like Lord Rama went to Dandakaranya in that forest, and so many hundreds of sages were all performing penance for how long a time. And when they saw Rama, that was the culmination of their tapas. And they just fell in love with him. The rishis fell in love with him. He was so beautiful, so charming, so attractive, that they wanted a physical, at least a body contact with him. Rama says, no way, not in this incarnation. I cannot fulfill your desire. So when I am born next time as Krishna, then I will fulfill. So all these were born as gopis, you know. All these sages were all born as gopis. That the desire to have contact with the Lord satisfied. Lord Krishna will satisfy everybody. Rama has his kodanda, and therefore he has his maryada, and so he will not cross that maryada. Not that Lord Krishna doesn't have maryada, but still, he functions on his own rules. So this Nara Narayana then got incarnated as Krishna and Arjuna. Nara became Arjuna, sage Nara became Arjuna, and sage Narayana became Krishna. That's how Nara Narayana and Krishna Arjuna, they're inseparable. These two brothers, Nara and this sage, are inseparable, and therefore in all the incarnations also they remain inseparable. And so Arjuna and Lord Krishna are almost inseparable. Krishna dhananjaya atma, Krishnasya atma dhananjaya. In Mahabharata say, ekam sattvam dvidha sthidam. Ekam sattvam sthidam dvidha. One truth manifests in 2-4 ways as Narayana, Narayana, as Arjuna and Krishna. And so Lord Krishna said, remember this, Krishnasyatma dhananjaya, dhananjaya, Krishnaho dhananjaya syatma, I Krishna is the atma of dhananjaya, and dhananjaya is the atma of Krishna. That shows what a great devotee Arjuna must have been. Because in 7th chapter Lord Krishna says, you know, udarasara jnani tvatme mevatam. Asita is Yuktatma, and before that, Tesham Gnani Nitya Yukta Eka Bhaktir Vishishare Priyohi Gnani Notyardam Aham Sacha Mama Priya. Lord Krishna says, my devotee is extremely dear to me, and I am extremely dear to my devotee also. The inseparable pair of Nara Narayana, Arjuna and Krishna. So Lord Krishna says, Vrishninam Vasudevasmi, I am Vasudeva among the descendants of Vrishni. Pandavanam dhananjaya. Among the sons of Pandu, there are called Pandavas, sons of Pandu. Mahabharata means amazing stories, you know. So, all the sons of Pandu, they're also interesting. Actually, the Pandu was cursed by a sage, such that he could not have physical contact with his... He had two wives, Kunti and Madri, but he was cursed. So, what do you do? Fortunately, Kunti, when she was unmarried, at that time when sage Durvasa was visiting them, and Kunti served Durvasa, and the sage was so pleased that he gave her these mantras, five mantras. So if you master these mantras, then you will be able to get the sons, you know, which from the Ishta Devatas are these mantras. Then Kunti was married to Pandu, and then before that she experimented, you know, because she is young, experimented whether these mantras work or not. And so she recited mantra, mastered the mantra of Surya, and it happened. Surya Devata came, but then she was pregnant, and there was this child, Karna. Surya said to her, don't worry, your virginity is not going to be affected by this, you know. And so the child, of course, she was too, I guess, ashamed of this, and the child was left and then floating into the river Ganga, etc., etc. And then after the marriage, she one by one mastered those mantras. And that's how we had this from Dharmaraja, we have Yudhishthira, and from Indra, we have Arjuna, from Vayu, we have Bhimasena. Now the last mantra remains. So she gave it to Madri, the second wife of Pandu. She thought of Ashwini Kumaras. Therefore, the Ashwini Kumaras are the twins, you know, Sahadeva and Nakula were the twins. Of all of these five brothers of Pandu, sons of Pandu, Arjuna is the mightiest and the most noble. Yudhishthira, of course, is noble, but Arjuna is also very sattvic and mightiest. So Lord Krishna says, Pandavanam Dhananjaya. He has many names. One of the names of Arjuna is Dhananjaya, Dhanam Jayati. When his elder brother Yudhishthira performed the Rajasuya Yajna, that time Arjuna went with his army and conquered the whole world and brought a lot of wealth back with him. So since he won or conquered the dhanam of the wealth, since then he also can be called Dhananjaya. He was the most favorite disciple of his teacher Dronacharya. Actually, Dronacharya also, he had his son Ashwatthama. So Dronacharya was teaching the Pandavas, Kauravas, including his son Ashwatthama. You know what he would do? He wanted to teach special lessons to his son Ashwatthama. So he will send all these children away for fetching water at the river. Ashwatthama would come quickly, and then Dronacharya would give him special lessons. Arjuna came to know of this. So from then he also started coming back quickly. And then Dronacharya also gave lessons to both of them. That's how Arjuna also was, he gained great skills in archery. He had special weapons and special skills that other princes did not have. Once Arjuna was eating, I think, in the evening, and there was a light of lamp. Because of the gust of wind, that lamp, the flame, got extinguished. There was darkness. Arjuna continued to eat. Then he realized that I can eat in darkness also. Because of the training in my hand, even though I do not see my mouth, my hand automatically goes to the mouth. Meaning in dark also it can be done. If you have enough practice, in dark also you can do what you want. So from then on, he started practicing archery in dark. And he would be able to shoot the arrow by the sound, Shabdavedhi. Meaning that from the sound, he could shoot the arrow and hit the target. So he acquired all these different kinds of skills. Dhananjaya, of course, is very glorious. So Pandavanam Dhananjaya, I am Dhananjaya. Hey Arjuna, I am you. Right away, Narayana, Narayana, because they were one. You are me, and I am you. So look at this scene here, that in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Lord Krishna is giving this upadesha to Arjuna, declares that,
I am God and you are also God. And who is reporting all this? Veda Vyasa is reporting, you know. So next is Muninam Apyaham Vyasa. All of these people are Krishna. Vyasa also, his name was Krishna. You know, Arjuna of course is not Krishna, he is fair. But Lord Krishna also is Krishna. Vyasa. So Vivyasa Vedan Yasmat Saha Tasmat Vyasa Iti Smrutah. The sage, his name was Badara, and his first name was Krishna. Because he was dark, therefore, he was called Krishna. Because he was born in an island, island is Dvipa. And he was born in, that was called Dvaipayana. And his name was Krishna Dvaipayana. Because he performed great penance in Badrikasrama, that is called Badarayana also. And because he arranged the Vedas, the Vedas were in fact prevalent in India in many places and the oral tradition was maintained. So what sage Vyasa did was, he arranged them. He's called arranger. Vyasa means arranger also. So he arranged the Vedas into these four, Rigveda, Yajurveda, Samaveda, Atharvaveda. So that a person was required to study the Veda of his own lineage, and it would take 12 years or whatever it took to complete the study of the Veda. Because he was arranged, therefore also is Vyasa. And who is Vyasa? Vyasa, this is called Vyasapitha. This dais is called Vyasapitha. The person who sits here and gives discourses is Vyasa. So in the olden days, all the discourses of Puranas, etc. were given, they are called Vyasa. And of course, Vyasa, as you know, is credited with, I don't think there is any human being equivalent to Vyasa in Indian culture also. There is so much of reverence for Vyasa. This Guru Purnima, which we are celebrating, is a Vyasa Purnima. That's the Purnima on which day which Vyasa was born. Vyasa Purnima. Also, Vyasa is known to have composed Mahabharata, which consists of 100,000 couplets, the longest poem anywhere in the world. But as I said, so much reverence Vyasa commands from the people in India that they credit him with the composition of all the Puranas also. 18 Puranas. Vayu Purana, Agni Purana, Vamana Purana, Skanda Purana, of course Bhagavata Purana, Devi Purana, etc. 18 Puranas. I don't know. Vayu Purana is 55,000 verses. You know, these Puranas are tens of thousands of verses. He is credited with having composed all the Puranas. And again, credited with having also composed the Brahma Sutra. So that is why the Vedantins have the greatest connection with him. Sutra Bhashya Krutav Vande Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Bhadarayanam Sutra Bhashya Krutav Vande Bhagavantau Punah Punaham. Shankaram Shankaracharyam. Lord Shiva incarnated as Shankaracharya. Keshavam Bhadarayanam. Lord Keshava Narayana incarnated as Bhadarayana. Sutra Bhashya Krutav Vande. One of the sages composed Sutra, Brahma Sutra. So Bhadarayana or Veda Vyasa composed Brahma Sutra. The other sage, Shankaracharya, composed the Bhashya, Sutra Bhashya Krutav Vande. And so Badarayana is called Sutrakara, Shankaracharya is called Bhashyakara. Muninam Madhye, so Mannashilanam Madhye, those people whose nature it is to reflect, to contemplate, to reflect upon, deliberate upon such profound truths as Ishvara, as Atma. So those people for whom it is nature to contemplate upon these things. So what is our nature? If you watch yourself, catch yourself thinking, then you find, what do we think about? What does naturally come to us? What this fellow did yesterday, what he told me yesterday, what did I get, what did I lose, what did I get? It's ego always dominates our mind. All the chattering that goes on is all centered around ego. What I did, what I did not do, what I got, what I did not get. Total waste of time and waste of energy. Who is a muni? Muni na, among the munis. Among the sages, who is a muni? Manana shilanam. Those people whose nature, shila, shila means whose nature it is to do mananam. Upon Ishvara, upon Atma, upon the reality. So this is where the mind is always absorbed. That's called muni. Among them, the greatest of them is Vyasa. So muni nam apyaham Vyasaha. Kavinam ushana kavihi. Kavinam krantadarshinam sukshmat vivekinam madhye. Kavi means a poet. But the word kavi is krantada, means krantadarshi. One who can see beyond is called kavi. So what we do not see, a poet sees. He sees beyond what a normal person sees. He can see what is in the past, he can see what is in the future. He can see what does not meet the eyes, his kavi. So they are gifted people. Among these kavis, I am Ushana Kavihi. Ushanas is the name of Shukracharya. Also very recently you heard about him, the guru of all the asuras, daityas. So Shukracharya was a guru. He said to be the son of Bhrigu, you know. So Bhrigu and his wife was Puloma and their son was Shukra. His other name was Kavi, another name was Ushanas. So Ushana Kavihi, among the all the Kavis, or the poets, or Krantadarshins, mean those who see beyond, of among them, I am the Shukracharya. Another thing about Vyasa also is that he is called Chiranjivi. Ashwatthama Balir Vyasaha Hanumamsa Vibhishanaha Krupah Parshuramascha Saptaite Chirajivinaha. These seven are called Chirajivi, meaning they are called immortal. Chirajivi can be those who enjoy a very long life or those who are deathless. So these seven, Ashwatthama, Balihi, Vyasaha. So Vyasa also is one of the Chiranjivis, by the way. And we remember these in them in the mornings. So many verses that are chanted in the morning, one of them is this verse, that you remember the seven Chirajivi, you get that grace. And of course Markandeya came later, he's called the eighth one. Okay, now continuing with the next verse.
Dando damayata masmi. Niti rasmi jigishatam. Maunam chaivasmi guhyanam. Jnanam jnanavatamaham. Damayatam ahamad dandahasmi. Damayat. Dama here is the one who controls, who restrains. So Damayat is the one who restrains. Like a king also, his job is to restrain wherever necessary. So damayatanam, among those who have the power to restrain, power to discipline, among the discipliners, among those who enforce discipline, among those who enforce restraint. And why do they enforce discipline? For those who have become indisciplined. So adantan, utpathan, patipravartayatam. It is the duty of the king to favor the people who are following the righteous path and to restrain the people who are deviated from the righteousness. Because only when dharma prevails in the society that there can be harmony in the society. And therefore it is the responsibility of king to maintain that harmony. So he should favor and reward the people who are following the righteous path and should restrain, if necessary, punish. First of all, try to convert people who are deviated from righteous path, to change them around to follow the path of righteousness. And if they do not do that, then to punish if necessary. Let's go Damayat, the people whose
job it is to discipline, for enforce discipline among them. Of them, I am Dandaha. Here it is as Damayatam is actually the sixth case in terms of possession. Of the people who are enforcing the discipline, I am the Danda. Danda means discipline. Danda also means punishment. So the punishment that is given for restraining those who are deviated from the path of righteousness. That is why there is always danda, you know, a king also has a danda. And so that is a sign of his power and of his control. Niti rasmi jigishatam. Jigishatam jetumichatam. So jigisha jetumicha, the desire to conquer. Of those who wish to conquer, or of the conquerors, let us say, I am Nitihi, I am the justice. So Lord Krishna says that a conqueror or a victor or a victorious person should necessarily have Niti or justice. Meaning victory should be acquired through the means of Niti or justice. For gaining victory, you should not violate the values, or it's not that the end justifies any means. That by hook and crook you win, that is what is normally done, of course. Because, say, they play to win, that's all. And so during the play also, if nobody is watching, some foul play goes on there. And so while playing soccer, you just hit this fellow, and while playing hockey, you hit him. These things go on. Only when it becomes very flagrant that they are punished, otherwise these little things always go on. But no, Niti, then what is justice? What is justice means? Level playing field. So both the parties are level playing field. That's called dharma yuddha. And so in the former days when yuddha or the battle was there, then they would declare the rules which will govern the fight between the two parties, between two armies. So I am the Niti, I am the justice. Because that victory becomes a lasting victory which is gained on the basis of justice. Even if you gain the victory by compromising justice or fairness, then that victory will not last too long. So Niti asmi jigishatam. Maunam chaivasmi guhyanam. Guhyanam gopyanam madhye. Among those the things that are to be hidden, things that are secret. So, maunam chaivasmi guhyanam, among those which are to be hidden or to be kept secret, I am the maunam, I am the silence. It's called vacham yamatvam, just keeping mum, that's all. Maunam is keeping mum. That's the best way of protecting a secret. Because nobody can know what is in the mind of this person who doesn't talk and doesn't speak anything, you know. And that, of course, some people do not speak, but their expressions tell what is going on inside. Not that kind of maunam. Meaning that you are nothing but just stone-faced, that's what you are. You are silent with no expressions on your face. Then there is no way that somebody can know whether this fellow knows or not. And what does he know? What does he think? Because it becomes particularly important when somebody is sharing their secret with you. When somebody is sharing their private things with you, then sometimes the Swami, please don't tell this to anybody, you know. They are so anxious, you know. I said, you know, when you tell a Swami, I don't think you have to add this kind of a qualification, don't tell anybody. But anyway, we understand, it's just anxiety, because they have shared it with somebody and then it has, you know, spread, and so please let this not happen. Mauna, but the Swami is mauna. Even when the topic arises, as though you do not know anything, you know. And that is the best way of keeping a secret. And so there are different ways of maintaining secret of them, this maunam, silence, vacham yamaha, meaning the restraining of the speech is the best way of maintaining a secret. Jnanam jnanavatam aham. Jnanavatam jnaninam. Here jnanam also can mean Brahma Vidya. Yashravanam mananidhyasana paripaka prabhavam.
the knowledge that arises as a result of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. What is that knowledge? Advitya Sakshatkara Rupam, of the nature, immediate knowledge of the truth, which is self, which is non-dual, which eliminates all ignorance, knowing which nothing remains to be known, that knowledge. Lord Krishna says, that knowledge I am. Of the wise, I am the wisdom. Of the enlightened people, I am the knowledge or enlightenment. So there also, it is Lord Krishna's grace. In the 10th chapter, Lord Krishna said earlier in this chapter itself, Tesham satadyuktanam bhajatam pridipurvakam dadami buddhiyogam tam yenamam upayantite. When I see that my devotees are worshipping me out of love for me, they are totally devoted to worshipping me, that's all there is in their lives, I am the only one in their life. And why are they worshipping me? Not without any agenda. Without any desire for personal gain, they just worship me out of love and devotion for myself. When I see this, Tesham eva anukampadam, then anukampa, a compassion arises in me, Lord Krishna says, and I want to do something for them. So Lord also wants to become Uruna, meaning he also feels indebted, and he also wants to become free from death. As Lord Rama says, look at this Hanuman, I can never become free from debt of Hanuman. For what all he has done for me, any number of lifetimes, he says, I cannot become free from the debt. But when Lord says that, what it means is that there is this provisional scheme of things that there is no debt left, the accounts are all settled. Meaning that when the devotees do this, without asking for anything, because their satisfaction comes in the very act of worship, let's go karma yoga ultimately, that you do something out of love for doing that. Worship the Lord out of love for the Lord. So Lord Krishna says, when I see them, Teshamivanukampasam, out of compassion for them, I, who seated their own self, I illumine the lamp of knowledge and dispel the darkness of ignorance. And that's how Lord Krishna says, I shine as a lamp of knowledge. Jnanam, jnanam, jnanamatanvaham. Among those who are enlightened people, or the wise people, and the way knowledge or the wisdom. Let us have a break for 15 minutes and we come back and do the rest of the verses.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.